This is URN Sport.
I bloody love football.
Hello, it is that time of the week again. Welcome along to URN Sport's Big Monday Night In podcast, where we reflect on all of the weekend's Premier League action. And to help us do it this week, we are joined by Pavan and Reese, who I'm sure are looking forward to talking about the game that kicked off on Sunday. Sunday afternoon. It was a late kickoff, not the latest kickoff of the day, but we won't be talking about that fixture. But yeah, we will come on to proceedings at the Emirates a little bit later in the podcast. I think it's fair to say, lads, the place to start is the King Power Stadium. The early kickoff on Saturday afternoon. Now, we touched upon a lot of Saturday's games on our watch along on Saturday night, which you can find on Facebook, where we saw some goals for once, which was very exciting. Manchester City 3, Tottenham Hotspur 0. So if you want to hear more in-depth reactions to the games that took place on Saturday, then head over to our Facebook page at URN Sport to find those. Just touching upon that game, though, between Leicester and Liverpool, obviously a massive capitulation from the Reds in the last 10 minutes or so. Brendan Rodgers' side mounting an amazing comeback. For 75 minutes, though, Pavan, we were talking about this on the group chat on the day. Liverpool played really, really well. What was better and improved, would you say, about Liverpool's approach, and what can they take heart from their game?
Well, I think, you know, they approached the game with the right mentality and kind of squeezed Leicester for, you know, as you said, 75 minutes. Leicester were kind of only able to get out with long balls, and Vardy was having to chase down the channels, not really reaching many of them, and they were just cleaning up and dominating them in their own half. A couple of balls went into Mane and Salah. Firmino obviously had that great assist for Salah's goal, and they were kind of just spraying it around with, you know, a newfound confidence, which kind of suggested they were, you know, slowly and surely getting back to their, you know, their best levels. And then, you know, the errors just flew in, really. In about 15 minutes you had the Kabak and Alisson error, which I think has to go down to Alisson more, because, you know, he's the experienced person there. Kabak's new, and he's basically, I don't know what he's doing. He's got another rush of blood to his head, and he's just gone for the ball. And, you know, Vardy's pounced on that. The first goal, the actual equaliser from Maddison, I mean, on reflection, I can't actually see Firmino's foot, which is playing Amarty onside. That was like, I don't know if that is onside, but that was a proper tight call. But, you know, in the end, I guess Leicester just do what they did best, and they just benefited off the mistakes. So, you know, it puts Leicester in a very strong league position as they continue to kind of hunt down Manchester City. So, yeah, it was a good performance from Leicester. Obviously, they've got some tough games coming up in the next couple of months, but yeah, just a pure capitulation from Liverpool.
Let's talk about that equaliser, Reese, that Pavan refers to there. Controversial decision, first and foremost, to award a free kick. Replays kind of suggest, well, it's very, very difficult to say. You can't really tell whether the challenge from Thiago was in the box or not. The referee decided to give, he initially, Anthony Taylor, gave a penalty, but VAR changed the decision to give a free kick. From that free kick, Maddison scored. But like Pavan says, you can't really see where Firmino's foot is to play Amarty onside. And kind of the wider point that I wanted to make here is the problem with VAR when, you know, it approaches those kinds of decisions, is that the technology is effectively subjective because it's reliant on how a referee sees that incident. Because, you know, replays, to me anyway, suggested that Amarty was offside and it shouldn't have been given.
Yeah, no, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I think, you know, sort of generally people were coming to terms a bit more with the offside calls, you know, at the start of last season when, you know, goals being ruled out and stuff for toenails being offside and, you know, what have you. You know, there was a lot of outrage and whatnot. But now people are sort of coming to terms with it, like, look, you know, it's a bit annoying, it's a bit ridiculous, but at least with the offside stuff, it's objective. But it's an interesting point there you make about there is, you know, maybe it isn't completely objective. There's a bit of subjectivity involved with that Leicester City equaliser. And obviously it completely changed the game as well for both sides. And disappointment for Liverpool with that one. They have the right to feel a bit hard done by this season. But in terms of VAR and sort of refereeing, I suppose all teams have, you know, their unlucky stories. But I think it'll all balance out in the end. They had a good, VAR was a bit of a friend of Liverpool last season. And, you know, I think it's just the world sort of balancing things out in the end.
I think in Liverpool's defence, and I never thought I would say that sentence in my life, of course, they were extremely hard done by in the Merseyside derby with the disallowed goal for Jordan Henderson. Sadio Mane ruled offside, where replay suggests that, I mean, there's not an awful lot in it. Of course, the incident at the weekend, there was also a game involving Roberto Firmino being ruled for offside. I can't remember who the opposition was, but again, a very, very tight call. Pavan, I know that there are some leagues, I believe it's the Dutch league, who have introduced this thing. I think they've described it as kind of a margin for error, essentially, which is where when decisions are as tight as the one on Saturday, they kind of go with the on-field referee's decision. Now, in that case, it would have been offside because the linesman had raised his flag. Do you think going into next season, that's something that VAR needs to introduce? That when decisions are as tight as that and you're having to draw lines and you're kind of reading images in a different way that the on-field referees are doing when even in such a tight call that you've got to back the on-field referee's decision. Do you think that's something that could be introduced?
I think it could be, but then I think the referees at the moment are kind of using VAR to kind of make sure that they're right. So they don't always give what their gut always tells them. They kind of go with a murky decision and then wait for the guy with the video to tell them whether they should have another look at it or whatever. So I think they're already kind of doubting themselves. I think FIFA said they were trialing something where the technology basically automatically will draw the lines. Well, it won't even draw the lines. It will just kind of identify if someone's offside or not. And I think there's been loads of scenarios where people are drawing lines at different points. Like it's like from the back of a foot, like middle of a foot, from this green line on the sleeve, which no one really knows where that stops and where that starts. So I think the whole thing is just, it's just confusing. In every match, it's different. There's no consistency. I think Reese is right. It probably does balance out, but I think ultimately it comes down to the laws of the game and they just keep changing. Like every week we see this new rule being introduced that Peter Walton has to, you know, explain on BT Sport, which is not very helpful at all. It's just confusing. I just hope they can kind of use it properly because they don't have these problems across Europe and the Champions League. It's used pretty diligently there, but it just seems to be the level of officiating in England that is just letting it down.
I saw someone on Twitter summarise the situation, I think, with VAR perfectly, which was, I see an incident myself and can tell or believe that's onside, that's offside, but I'm not sure what the referee, what VAR is going to give. And, you know, I personally, as a football fan, I don't think we should live in a world where that is the case. So I think Liverpool were extremely hard done by there. Of course, compounded by mistakes later in the game by Alisson Quebec and that real kind of defensive lapse for the third goal as well. The last point I'll make about this game between Leicester and Liverpool on Saturday, because, you know, for all the comment that's been made about Liverpool and their terrible form at this moment in time, like I say, I thought they played a lot better on Saturday and they've got the perfect chance to respond next weekend in the Merseyside derby, which I would fully, fully expect them to do, is Leicester. Now, Pavan, you said it's put them in a really, really good position, this victory. Reese, it's still early days. There's still a lot of football to be played in this season. But has that victory secured Leicester's place in the Premier League top four?
Well, you could never say never. But they do look, you know, more consistent than the other teams around them. Obviously, Bar City, who are just running away with the title now. But in terms of the points now, obviously, they're 6 points ahead of Liverpool. But as it stood when Liverpool 1-0 up, they're on the exact same amount of points. And so that is what you that is basically what you would call a six-pointer in that sense. So that was a huge victory for them. And, you know, they did really well to hang in there and take their chances when they came at the end of the game, pick Liverpool off. Very professional performance from them. And, you know, can't heap enough praise on them at the moment. Yeah, they're definitely more consistent than like, say, Manchester United. I'm sure we'll come on to them. And, you know, Liverpool as well, obviously, at the moment. So, you know, what's to say they can't finish in the top four? I would back them at this moment if I was a betting man, for sure. They just look very strong defensively. Their signings in the summer have been very astute, you know, actually improving the team. Harvey Barnes is just an absolute machine now, you know, regularly chipping in with goals. And of course, they've got Jamie Vardy, ever reliable up front. And Yuri Tielemans really coming into his own in midfield. So they just look excellent at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the only concern you would have about Leicester is the way that they ended last season, but they certainly seem a stronger outfit than last season. So a brilliant victory for them. But like I say, I don't think the crisis at Liverpool, which is being made out, it's not going to go on for much longer. I can assure you they will get back to winning ways at Anfield next Saturday. God, the prospect of that game is already worrying and depressing me quite a lot. And what we're 6-7 days before that game takes place, I'm not looking forward to it at all. Let's move on to the other games that took place on Saturday afternoon. Of course, we mentioned earlier in the programme that we touched upon them in a little bit more detail on the watch-along. Burnley winning at Palace, Manchester City thumping Mourinho. Now, I never thought I would say the following sentence, but I am going to compare Roy Hodgson and Jose Mourinho. I'm going to put them together here. Pavan, are they simply two defensive managers who are not utilising the attacking talents of their team and are therefore holding their respective clubs back?
Wow, that's a big call, putting Jose in that category. I mean, yeah, they both play defensive football. One's obviously got a lot more pedigree and a lot more financial capability at, you know, for the clubs that they're at. I think you can, you know, we obviously talked about Roy Hodgson a lot in that watch along, and we all kind of agreed that it might be time for him to go, but that's not to say he's done an absolutely terrible job. But then you look at Jose Mourinho, and their defensive shape was all over the place against City, got ripped apart. Obviously, Davinson and Sanchez like swimming on the floor trying to stop that. That Gundogan goal, which is everywhere. That was great. That's a great screenshot from this weekend. But yeah, even when they got the ball to Kane, like he wasn't even allowed to turn. City smothered him with about 2-3 players. And it just feels like there's no plan B. If you can't get it to Kane and he can't thread someone through, they're kind of out of ideas. Son looked a bit, you know, fatigued that day. So you look to the bench or other options. You've got Lamella, hit and miss. Lucas Moura got subbed off that game, didn't he, at halftime. Gareth Bale came on, not making an impact. Dele Alli seems to have made up with him, but, you know, still kind of struggling for form and fitness on the pitch. So, you know, I don't know where this Spurs team are in, because they went from title contenders to then kind of dropping off to, I guess what we would say, Europa League contenders in the league. So it's very hard to gauge where they are at, but I think the drop off is pretty worrying. I'd still back them to get European football of some sort, but it's worrying that there's not really much structure. And we know that if it gets, you know, a little bit too bad, Jose can turn a bit toxic.
Yeah, I completely agree. I just put those two managers together mainly for the sake of time, but also because you know, they pride themselves on how effective they are defensively, and at this moment in time, it's just not working for them. And you look at the players that they've got in the final third, Crystal Palace with the likes of Eze, Townsend, Jordan Ayew, Michy Batshuayi, and of course the number of attackers that you've just mentioned there that are at Tottenham Hotspur, for them to be in the positions that they're in and the form at this moment in time, I think is quite worrying and suggests that maybe a change in management is needed. The late game on Saturday night, Rhys, 0-0 between Brighton and Aston Villa. Is it fair to say that this was a game that maybe a month ago Brighton would have lost, and if it was last season, Villa would have lost?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, actually. Yes. Yeah. we spoke about Brighton's sort of resurgence last week, didn't we? And they seem much better. And maybe without the fear of relegation, they're sort of expressing themselves a bit more as well, which is nice to see. In terms of Villa, you know, obviously the improvement, the recruitment they had in the summer as well. Obviously, they stayed up by virtue of Hawkeye. But, you know, they've taken that and built on it. You know, they haven't rested on their laurels. They know that they're lucky to still be here. But by no means are they lucky to be here now. They're not making up the numbers. They are a force in this division. And, you know, you would have expected a bit more. I was going to say a few more goals. There wasn't any goals. But, you know, I think that was down to the goalkeeping heroics of Emi Martinez, who, you know, who's he? I don't know. But he seems like a decent keeper. Wasn't the best way to end an exciting Saturday, a 0-0 draw. But... you know, we're used to those, obviously, on our Saturday night live shows. So, you know, we're more than used to seeing a 0-0. But, both sides on the up, it's fair to say. And, you know, a draw probably a fair result as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Emi Martinez's goalkeeping heroics definitely deserves mention. Brilliant performance from him, continuing on from a fantastic season so far, individually and collectively, for Aston Villa. On to Sunday's games, lads. Don't worry, Arsenal is coming, I promise you. The early game, though, was between Southampton and Wolves. Brilliant goal from Pedro Neto, the difference between the two teams at St Mary's. Southampton, 5 straight league defeats for them now. They've tumbled down to 13th place. Obviously, they beat Wolves in the FA Cup earlier in midweek. And then, of course, lose the league game yesterday, despite taking the lead in the match for a really good Danny Ings goal. What's really going on at Southampton, Pavan, at this moment in time? I get the impression they're a team that kind of play in extremes. You know, if you get them at a good time, they're a very, very difficult team to play against. But if you get them in a run of form similar to the one that they're currently going on, they're quite an easy opposition to play against.
Yeah, I think we've kind of seen the reliance they have on Danny Ings. Obviously, he was in great form at the start of the season, which was kind of, personified their level of performance. And not to say he's dropped off, but he had an injury and he's just coming back. Obviously, you know, scored a great goal this game. But yeah, I think you've got to look at the defensive side more than anything, because obviously they shipped 9 again at United. And, you know, Pedro Neto caught Yannick Vestergaard flat-footed for, you know, what was a brilliant piece of, you know, play from him. Yeah, they just don't look comfortable defending set pieces. Just Wolves have been pretty toothless, and they looked very troubled by Wolves. Couldn't really deal with Pedro Neto or Traore. I think they've had injuries as well. I think Carl Walker-Peters went off in that game, so they've had fullback problems the whole season. I think obviously they tried to get fullback cover in January. I don't think they did successfully. So, it's hard to put your finger on it, because I think it's just confidence, to be honest with you. But I don't understand why there's such extreme fluctuations between, you know, a great performance and then a performance like that. I think there is a part of their team where the build-up plays so good, and then when they get to the box, if it doesn't fall to Danny Ings, you're kind of, it's kind of a 50-50 whether the chance is taken or not. But I think it's just, yeah, it's just confidence. But Hasenhüttl's got to work it out, because it's just going, you know, up and down. And this is a really bad run at the moment.
Yeah, they're not in a very good place at all. Brilliant win for Wolves, who I think any kind of concerns that they might be dragged into a relegation battle potentially because of their poor start to the season have really been put to bed now. Fantastic victory for them, and they'll be looking towards the top 10 and upwards from there. In terms of Black Country teams, West Bromwich Albion versus Manchester United was the next game on Sunday afternoon, a 1-1 draw at the Hawthorns. A desperately disappointing performance and result for Manchester United, Reece. Bruno Fernandes' equaliser kind of pulling them out of the mire. Didn't really look like scoring other than that. Of course, the big save from Sam Johnston at the end, the other real noticeable moment from a United point of view. We spoke last week about United's kind of lack of ambition when they got to the top of the Premier League table. The fact that nobody, including the manager, was saying, you know, we're in this title race. We're going to be a key player between now and the end of the season. Do results and performances like yesterday justify that pessimism from United? And what is missing from that team that pushes them from perhaps, you know, what you would say is a team that is going to qualify for the Champions League, from that to a contender for the league?
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting question as well. And
thanks, Reece.
Lots of compliments for you today. I didn't watch the match live. I watched the highlights back. And when I, you know, started watching the highlights, I was expecting it to be like Man United domination, West Brom hanging on. But it really wasn't like that. And I feel like West Brom had the better chances. Their striker who scored their goal, Diagne, I think that's how you pronounce it. He could have had a hat-trick with the chances he had as well. Like you say, desperately poor from Manchester United. Obviously, you've got Bruno Fernandes, who is that sort of player that will grab a game by the scruff of the neck. And obviously, scored an amazing equalising goal. Just what a player. But, you know, obviously, he struggled in that second half. And, you know, he's not going to be able to play like amazingly all the time. He needs other players that can do a similar thing if he's not quite on it. And, you know, you look at like someone like Anthony Martial, and he's not that sort of player that's going to be like, right, this is my day, I'm going to make things happen for my team, you know. And I think, yeah, it is a mentality issue once again, I think, because the talent's definitely there, especially in the attacking half of the pitch. And, you know, they just couldn't, you know, you'd expect a team of players like that against a team like West Brom, who have been put to the, like, they've got a minus 36 goal difference. You're expecting Man United to absolutely crush them yesterday. And instead, they were poor and needed, you know, a moment of sheer brilliance to sort of get them out of trouble in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really, really disappointed with Manchester United yesterday because, like you said, with the quality of player that they've got on the pitch and West Brom's dreadful form and recent performances, you would have expected United really to put them to the sword. But West Brom, based on chances alone, they should have won the game. And I mentioned earlier that save from Sam Johnston, big shout out to him. And he's somebody that I desperately, desperately hope that if West Brom get relegated, Everton look to bring in, because I think he would be a brilliant signing, one of the country's best goalkeepers, I think it's fair to say. Let's move on to the game that the two lads here on the show tonight really want to talk about, and that's Arsenal 4, Leeds United 2. A clinical first half at the Emirates put the Gunners 3-0 up at the break. Aubameyang with a hat-trick overall over the course of the 90 minutes. And Pavan, we said after the Aston Villa game and the Wolves game to a certain extent that one thing that had been missing from Arsenal's game was end product. They were getting into some good areas, playing some good football, but just couldn't either get enough shots away or get enough good shots away, if that makes sense. Did it all click and come together on Sunday night?
Well, pretty much, yeah. I mean, at Villa, you know, we reflected on it. We didn't actually play that badly. We had loads of, attacking players. Arteta put on so many players to kind of create overloads, and nobody really took the initiative that game. But this game, the kind of creative outlets of Smith Rowe, Odegaard and Saka all in behind Aubameyang. It just worked. It clicked. Aubameyang looks back to his best after that that miss, you know, the kind of period off with his family reasons. But yeah, a great hat trick, his first Premier League hat trick. And yeah, it was just really good to see us kind of make the right decisions, because it's all been on, you know, Bukayo Saka trying to pull us out the mud. And it was a real team performance. Everybody had a good first half. I think it was probably our best half of football this season, maybe rivaling with the one we had at Chelsea at the Emirates earlier, you know, before Christmas. But yeah, it was just nice to see it all come together. And, you know, in the second half, I know Leeds came back, but, you know, nobody's going to contain Leeds for a full 90 minutes. So on that basis, it was a very good performance. And, you know, we've got some big Europa League knockout games and then a game against Man City next weekend. So we're going to need all the confidence we can get if we're going to get anything out of that.
Reece, you put on the group chat yesterday that you couldn't remember the last time Arsenal had battered an opposition team. And obviously being 3-0 up at halftime, I think it's fair to say that Arsenal were battering Marcelo Bielsa's side at that point. How did they do it?
Oh, well, you know, I think what I liked seeing was Odegaard and Smith Rowe playing at the same time. I thought it was going to be a case of like one or the other plays. And I really like that Arteta put them both in, you know, shoehorned them both in, and they were sort of switching positions, getting into all sorts of areas. And then obviously you had Saka on the right. It was just absolutely brilliant. Should have had two penalties, but, you know, fortunately we went and won anyway, so we don't have to talk too much about the VAR there. But yeah, it sort of felt like a sort of Wenger-y performance in the sense that he just chucks, you know, Arteta was just like, I'm just going to put all these great attacking players on and sort of see what happens. And obviously it came off very well. And I suppose against Leeds, who, you know, have been very leaky this season, probably the time to test that out. In terms of the context of Arsenal season, very much must win with the Premier League fixtures we've got coming up. It's like City, Leicester, Spurs, West Ham, Liverpool, next five Premier League games. And then during that time as well, trips to Rome and Greece. So, you know, Europa League's bad enough for travelling when you got one away, that, you know, one leg having to go to another country. Now we've got two legs having to go to another country. So, yeah, it was very much important that we won that one, because the fixtures are only going to get harder. And I think Pavan put in the chat as well, you know, gives the players confidence ahead of Benfica. And I didn't find out until today that Benfica actually came second in their Europa League group to Rangers. So that does fill me with a bit more confidence than I had before as well. In terms of Sunday, you know, very good performance. Obviously, let Leeds back in towards the end, which is a bit, you know, it goes back to what Pav and I have been saying before. Like, you know, we can only seem to have one good half because we technically lost the second half. But I suppose in terms of, I think you're always going to take your foot off the gas slightly when you're 4-0 up, naturally, no matter what the manager says or, you know, tries to get the players to think. But yeah, just blew them away in that first half. And, we just have to get Cech Tiote's to mess it up. Fortunately, that didn't happen. So yeah, great day out for the boys. And it was nice to see Aubameyang's post-match interview talking about, you know, how much, you know, love he's been receiving from the fans, given his mother's illness and stuff. So it's really nice to see him back smiling as well. So that, you know, that was just wholesome as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And great resolve from Arsenal, I think, in those latter stages, not to cave in, because like Pavan alluded to, Leeds are relentless. They just keep going and going. It is incredible to watch just how urgent their press is at all times. And I think, you know, with a little bit more quality from in both boxes, in terms of personnel, maybe in the summer, if they can bring in some better attackers, some better defenders, I think Leeds will go places. I really, really do, based on that style of play and how relentless they are. The last game of the Sunday of Premier League matches, Everton 0, Fulham 2. Well, typical, pathetic Everton performance against the team that they are expected to beat. Can't say I didn't see it coming, because after the highs of beating Tottenham in the FA Cup, I happened to think that Everton would let me down on Sunday against Fulham, and they did. fair to say that the Toffees at this moment in time are overly reliant on Dominic Calvert-Lewin for goals and also just for a focal point to play off. I will say on that game, I think that's the first time really Carlo Ancelotti has made a bit of a managerial blunder since he's been in charge. His team selection to include Gylfi Sigurdsson and James Rodriguez in a front three, not enough width there whatsoever, and Fulham were able to run ragged. The last question I will ask you on the subject of that game, lads, is Fulham, they're 7 points off safety now. Josh Madger obviously getting his first two goals for the club. Pavan, in a quick word, have they got enough to stay up? Because they were very impressive yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, all of their build-up play is impressive enough to stay up. It's just whether they can convert that into goals. And I think Josh Madger, does that perfectly. And obviously the brace is needed because, we were talking about it in the transfer window, they need a striker because nobody's there converting the chances. So, yeah, in a simple answer, they've recruited the right person and they just need to kind of take this with confidence and basically feed Josh Madger and hopefully he can score the goals to keep him up.
Yeah, definitely. I was very impressed with Josh Madger yesterday in the sense that I don't think he did anything spectacular per se. Like, his hold-up play wasn't great, but the two chances that were there for him, which... granted, they were chances you would expect him to score, but we've said that about Fulham's attackers all season, that they should have scored that, they should have converted that. So to have someone at the front of their attack taking those chances is very reassuring and will give them hope going into the remainder of the season. There are two other games taking place in the Premier League tonight. West Ham versus Sheffield United is the early kickoff at the London Stadium. Rhys, West Ham were disappointed with the draw against Fulham last weekend, and obviously they were beaten in the FA Cup away at Old Trafford as well against a Sheffield United side. They've had some good performances, some decent results recently. Can you see them causing an upset here?
Yeah, this is the sort of fixture that you'd expect West Ham to trip up on. I know they've been in great form recently, but I think this would be like a sort of variant balancing out thing tonight. I reckon maybe a draw or a Sheffield United win. But this is where West Ham will go and put them to the sword and make me look silly. Disappointing against Fulham. And I think, they've been in form that's a bit too good for the likes of them, if you like. So natural variance will come into play here and I can see them tripping up. That's all I'm going to say.
And finally, Pavan, the 8 o'clock game, the Rude Hullet derby, Chelsea versus Newcastle at Stamford Bridge. I mean, you can't really back against Thomas Tuchel's side, can you?
No, you can't really. I mean, especially with Callum Wilson out for like up to 8 weeks. I mean, that's probably put Newcastle down. But, they played well. And, if Joe Willock and Almiron can play well, especially with Saint-Maximin back, maybe they have a chance. But yeah, Chelsea have been playing quite well with quite a lot of swagger at the moment. So, yeah, I'd back them to comfortably win today.
And that is it. The big Monday night in for another week comes to a close. Big thank you then to Pavan and Rhys for joining me for this episode to dissect some of the weekend's events in the Premier League. Euroen Sport is back this week with plenty of podcasts for you to listen to. The Sports Centre returns, where we will be reflecting on the Six Nations and more later in the week. Over the Trent will also be back in the next few days as well, reflecting on events at Meadow Lane and the City Ground. And the Premier League Show at Home will return on Saturday night for the Merseyside derby between Liverpool and Everton. Whether I will be there, I'm not sure. It will depend on my stress throughout the course of the day, but the stream will return, so please do join us for that. Thank you very much for listening. All the best. And yes, keep it your own sport for the next 7 days or so.